This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
I will always give out a list of my contractors, but trust me, before I send that out, I'm telling my contractor that if their work with me slows up from it, that's the problem.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with Brett Grigsby. Brett is a friend and fellow investor in the Louisville, Kentucky market. He has a crazy background. We'll get into all of it, but he's done so many deals and just, I would say, an expert in like five core real estate strategies. We dig into management and construction today, but we definitely are going to need to do a part two with Brett, hearing on all his other kind of skills and what he's doing. He's now getting into Airbnb and also doing more like his own bigger multifamily projects. So Brett's a cool guy. Check him out on Facebook too. He's very active there, but a little bit more detail on his background. He has about 65 units now. He's done over 75 deals. He mostly invests in the Louisville, Kentucky market, but now has short-term rentals in Cumberland, Kentucky, and the Gulf Shores. Just so many good learnings, nuggets from this episode. One of my favorite learnings was handling contractors, being that Brett has a construction background and manages contractors all the time. He had some great tips on handling them, finding them, managing them, paying them, and just making sure that your jobs go well when you're kind of doing a new job with a new contractor in a new city. So we kind of cover that top to bottom. The tangible tip for this episode is using virtual assistants to create content. I'm going to be doing more posts about this in the Facebook group and on my Instagram, but I feel really good about our process right now for getting content out. And the only parts of it that I'm doing are maybe like 5 to 10% of the actual like end result that you see. And it just really consists of anything that needs my face or my voice. And then everything else goes into a sequence where virtual assistants or automations take over from Zapier. So we'll be doing more about that, but if you're struggling with creating content, I really recommend just going on Upwork or Fiverr or Freelancer, making a job for someone who can just do Canva logos for you and seeing if you can put that into your marketing plan for your business this week. You'll be very surprised. There's so much good talent out there. And if you're not a creative person, it can take a lot of the pressure off you. So it's helping us a lot. And I really just want to share it with you guys. Hope that helps. Today is an awesome episode with Brett Grigsby. Brett, what's going on, man? Welcome to the podcast. Excited to have you.
Great to be here. I'm excited.
This is a long time coming, man. This is overdue. I feel like we've gone through most of the Louisville network after coming out and hanging out people, but you've been on the list, man. But you're a busy guy. You got a lot going on.
I know we talked about it. Like, I don't know. It was probably like 6 months ago we talked about it and then like never kind of circled back on it. Talked about other stuff plenty, but then you're going on all these trips and
we'll get to it because one thing, guys, we were talking about before hitting record, Brett's gotten bigger, much bigger into the furnished rentals and Airbnb space. We were talking about kind of the trade-off of like using a property for enjoyment, but then also anytime you're using that property, you're taking it away from a potential, you know, big weekend, if it's a holiday weekend especially, you know, to make money. So I don't know. We were just kind of going back and forth on that. I guess, Brett, where do you fall on that right now before we get into anything?
I mean, I'm always going to fall with I would delay my gratification for renting out and getting money those weekends. I've probably sacrificed a lot over the years, so it doesn't hurt me to miss out on little things like that. And, I mean, luckily, me and my family, we've had the chances to go to some cool places for not too much out of our pocket. So, and not really any opportunity costs lost either. So we take advantage of those wherever we can.
For sure. It's kind of the best of both, you know, like it's such an overused term at this point, but like lifestyle business or a business that gives you the ability to travel or kind of have a little bit more fun than locked in an office or locked in one place. So a lot of ways to do it in real estate, definitely this one. So anyway, Brett, for those that don't know, you mind giving our listeners a high level background on how you got into this world of real estate, and then yeah, from a high level, what you do today in real estate?
Okay. So starts way back when I was in college. I figured that I wanted to do one of three things. I was either going to go into banking, insurance, or real estate. And I was pretty dead set on that. During college, I worked for a State Farm insurance, just selling, you know, life, health, fire, auto policies, you know, had all my license and everything, but it was one of the most boring jobs I've ever had. And I was like, that's not for me. So as soon as I graduated, I had a chance to go work for Chase Bank, and I was a personal banker there for a little bit. And again, I was like, this is almost as boring as selling insurance. So I was like, I'm not going to do this. So I was like, all right, we'll give real estate a shot, and hopefully this one works. And I went to work for an apartment complex here by U of L that was not like owned by the university, but it was student housing. So like luxury student apartments kind of taken off in the, you know, around 2009, 2010, at least here in Louisville. And now it's crazy around here, but I worked for a property by the campus, and I was a leasing manager there for 2 years. And then I went to another property that was just built by the campus, and I was the general manager there for 2 years. And all in all, I spent maybe like close to 5 years there in student housing and just running apartments. And I was like, okay, time to get out of student housing. I'm getting a little older. They're all staying the same age. So decided to get into just conventional, and I became a multi-site manager for just a management company based out of, I think they were based out of Michigan, but they had some properties here in Kentucky. So I had a property in Louisville and one in Shelbyville that I managed. And pretty shortly after I started there, I actually was posting some vacants on Craigslist. I know nobody uses Craigslist anymore, but I was posting some vacants on Craigslist, and I came across this post that was a real estate company in Louisville, Kentucky, looking for, you know, young, ambitious, new VP of operations to add to their team. And I was like, well, I'm almost certain that I don't have the experience that they're wanting in this, but I've never been one to pass up the shot at anything. I was like, I know I can sell pretty well, and I can sell myself, and I know what I'm doing, so maybe they'll like that. So I reached out, and it was the president of this company who put this ad on Craigslist, and I'm talking to him, and, you know, I'm like, we talk about, you know, what I do, what they're looking for. And at the time, they owned and or managed about 1,500 units across Louisville, Lexington, and Southern Indiana. And so we got to talking. I came in for an interview a couple times, and he calls me. He's like, man, I really like you. He goes, you don't quite have the experience that we're looking for on it exactly. He goes, but I want to bring you in. I'm just not going to call you a VP. I'm going to make you a director of operations. He goes, I'm going to teach you the rounds and everything. He goes, we'll get you to where you need to be, and eventually you'll become a VP. So I started with Denton Floyd Real Estate. It's been almost 6 years now, and I am now one of the VPs of operations here, but we've also grown. So there's not only, it used to just be me and the president working on everything. Now there's me, three other VPs. We've got five other people in ops. We've got like a marketing department, And we mostly manage, do third-party management, but we've got a little over 5,000 units now across Louisville, Lexington, Southern Indiana. We're moving into like Indy, Nashville, Jacksonville, Florida. Just doing a whole lot of new markets coming up too.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's all insane and like cool background. What are you doing? I don't want you to shortchange yourself.
Yeah, on my side.
Yeah. On my side, people might think you're just, you know, a W-2 guy now, but you're far from that.
On my side, my best friend and I, we decided like we each had one rental. So I had a rental of a house that I bought when I was in college up in Ohio, and I moved back to Kentucky and I started renting it out in like 2011 when I graduated. And he had a house that he bought in 2012, and he moved to a new house in like 15 and started renting out his first house. And we're like, look, I mean, this is good. We've got good cash flow on these two units. Like, let's buy some more units. And we both had money. So in the end of 2000, around the end of 2018, we started buying units, some from the company I work for. They were trying to sell some stuff, like smaller units, smaller buildings that they didn't want to mess with anymore. So we bought a lot off them, and we've been buying and flipping them and holding on to the good ones and doing flips and things like that for the past just over 3 years now. And we started in August of 2018. We bought two houses from them. In October, we bought a duplex. And then September, we bought a duplex from them. And then in that October, we bought a 14-unit package from them. And then I met Rob Bergeron and bought a flip from Frank Miller. And we had probably had no business doing that flip, but we ended up doing it and it turned out well. Now we've got about, I think at most we had about 75 units. Right now we've got about 63 or 64 units right now. Mm-hmm. And we, like I said, we focus more on long-term holds here in Louisville. Some Airbnb here in Louisville, and then we've got Airbnbs in some more destination spots. We're trying to expand that, and then we'll try and do, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 flips a year to help keep, you know, money coming in so we can buy new stuff.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think I read that you've done over 75 deals.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, the most at any one given time we've owned is probably 75, but I mean, we've sold in the past, you know, 2.5 years, because we didn't really sell our first flip until it's been right around 2 years ago is when we sold our first flip. Mm-hmm. So we probably sold 8 or 9 flips in the past 2 years, and we've got 4 going right now. And we've sold off some of the stuff that we've bought throughout that time. So we've sold a couple single houses out of it. We've sold some fourplexes that we've owned in them and made some good returns on those and just rolled them into bigger and better things. And then, you know, if properties just don't match up with areas or style of what we're wanting to do, we'll just, you know, try and get best we can for them or find the best exit strategy for them at that point. Like, we had a house we just sold 2 months ago that our plan, it was one of the first ones we ever bought, and it had a resident in it. And we said, when this guy moves out, we're going to flip this house and we're going to sell it as a flip. Well, the guy moved out, like he stayed there for almost 3 years, and then he moved out, and we're like, you know what, by the time we renovate this, the difference in what we make is probably not going to be any difference if we just sell it how it sits. So we sold it without doing any work on it and made 50 grand on the house. Hmm. Instead of having to put another 60 grand in it to fix it up and then sell it and wait, you know, go through that whole time loss and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Okay. Brett, I'm having, you know, like, not a hard time like pinning you, but you, I feel like, do so many things, and I get this feedback too, but like, what would you say of what you've done or doing that like you feel the most expert expertise in? You know, is it construction? Is it property management? Because
the most expertise is going to be, most expertise is going to be in construction and property management. I mean, that's just from I've been in and or directly doing property management for over 10 years now. And a lot of that's been at assets that have construction or renovations or things like that. And kind of, you know, I had a kid real young and I bought a house at 21. And after I bought the house, I didn't have money to fix it up. So I just kind of had to learn by doing. It was either live in a shitty house or fix the stuff yourself. And I was like, I'm just going to learn to fix all this stuff myself. So, you know, YouTube's a great teacher. You can go on there and figure out how to do plumbing, electric, all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, I can do tile work. I can hang cabinets. I can run plumbing. I can run electric. I can do all that stuff. I don't do it much anymore, but I mean, I've had to learn it and been involved like directly with a lot of contractors over the years on some pretty big projects. So right. I'd say construction management and that sort of thing is a big focus of one of my expertises.
It's a general question, but for you, do you think there's value in learning how to do stuff yourself at the beginning, you know, or do you think there's value
absolutely
in finding good people at the beginning and just, you know, paying them to do the stuff?
Now, I will say I used to be the type, and I know you talk about not doing this, and I agree 100%, but I used to be the type, because my partner, he started it long before, and we had different upbringings. I mean, he came from a lot of money. I came from, you know, pretty middle class, like right in the middle. And he'd be like, yeah, I got this guy over here mowing my grass. And I'm like, dude, we're 24. Why are you not mowing your own grass? And he's like, I don't want to mow my grass. And it's like $40 to pay this guy to mow my grass. And I'm like, you're an idiot. Mow your grass. But again, like I haven't mowed grass in 3 years and I wouldn't even think of going back to go and mow my grass now. But I think there is value in knowing how to do that stuff because it can protect you. In like if you're doing a big construction project and you don't know what things cost, so you don't know exactly what you may need to do or may not need to do in a project, you might not run your numbers correctly and figuring out whether it's a good deal or not. I mean, I can walk into a property now and pretty much put a decent budget together right in my head by walking it and, you know, walking the property for 30 minutes. I can get a pretty good idea of what everything's going to cost to get it to where we need to be.
Yeah. I mean, I go back and forth on it because it's a hard thing to like blanket statement of saying outsource way more or do certain things yourself. But I think with general like handyman stuff or contractor stuff, there is a level of like education that I think most people should have before attempting outsource just because you can get so badly ripped off and you also don't know how to how to assess if a job is done well or not. So I feel like at the beginning, it's almost like starting a property management, knowing a little bit about how to do it so that when you do offload it, it's like you can spot major problems. Like, what do you think about that?
Plus it'll give you an appreciation for the work as well.
That's true.
On the other end of it, you might be a little bit, you know, more understanding of a plumber that's got to crawl under your house and rerun drain lines in a crawl space or something like that if you've been down there. Or, you know, understanding of an electrician that's got to get up in a 140-degree attic to rerun some lines up there. That doesn't mean you go soft on them. I'm just saying it gives you a little bit of appreciation for what those guys are doing. And, I mean, we try and take care of all of our contractors, especially if they work well for us. I mean, we'll try and help them grow and get more business and everything like that.
I guess just to kind of like tie off on that, where do you fall now on like deciding to do a project or a thing yourself with your hands versus paying someone else to do it? Like an example that just from the pictures you posted, we'll post all your socials, but like, I know you just you redid a kitchen in an Airbnb and you put in new appliances, you painted the cabinets, maybe new hardware in the cabinets. Like, how do you decide if you're going to do that project or if you're going to hand that off to someone and, you know, like oversee it?
Nowadays, if it's in my house, there's probably a 50% chance that I'll do it. If it's not in my personal house, it's somebody else is doing it. Like I don't have time anymore to do. I mean, we've got so many things going on, and still doing a 9-to-5, even though I do have, pretty good autonomy at my job to handle a lot of stuff. There's still, obligations that I've got and time constraints that I have with this job that I'm not able to just drop everything whenever and do that. I mean, maybe if it was all I was doing and I didn't have the 9-to-5 anymore, I may be more involved in that just to fill some of my daily voids. But right now, if it's not my personal house, somebody else is doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
Or one of our contractors.
All right. So I guess they're just going down the path of, because your background is definitely, I'd say you could be an expert in a lot of things, but I feel like contractors, construction, and property management. So if someone is listening to this right now and they may have done a project or two, but they have, some remodeling coming up and they're freaking out. They hear all the stuff about it's impossible to find a good contractor. You're going to get ripped off. And it's really hard right now. What advice would you give to someone who's trying to put together a playbook or some best practices to not get ripped off, or how to have a decent experience with the contractor if they're about to start a project?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's like without being able to just write a book or a novel series on contracting and things like that, it's something that you have to get in there and do. Like I suffered from it for years. Like I bought my first house at 21 and then bought my second house at 25 and didn't buy my first real investment property until I was 28, and it was a flip. And then once I finished that, me and my partner, we started buying houses. Like I didn't want to wait until I think I was 32 when we started buying actual investment properties. Now I'm 35. Like I wish I'd have started when I bought my second house or before that. Cause I was a finance major. So I was always looking at the numbers, always, analyzing deals. Like I've been analyzing deals since I was in college, like looking at potential rentals and flips and running numbers and, oh, this would be a good deal. But what if this doesn't work out? Or what if this doesn't work out? And it's like, at some point you just have to do it. And luckily, we've been fortunate enough to never lose money on a property. We've come close before. We've had some where we're like, shit, we might not make any money on this one. But at the end of the day, we learned stuff from it that we almost completely rebuilt that house from the ground up, and we didn't expect to have to do that going in. Mm-hmm. So there's no there's no 100% strategy.
I just mean it from the sense of they're starting a project and they have work that needs to be done. Let's say they have two bathrooms that need to be done, and they're like, where do I start? Who do I call? How do I go about finding contractors? And how do I go about making sure that I'm going to oversee the work and not get ripped off?
Right. So what I would do, if I was in a new area or something like that, I would try and find, some realtors that maybe focus more on investment properties, or go around, maybe drive around to some apartments and see, not necessarily new ones, but older apartments that are maybe getting renovated or have been renovated recently. You'll be able to tell. I mean, you can tell when an old building looks like it's brand new again. That probably happened pretty recently, because after a few years, it starts to look a little dated again. So go and ask those people, hey, you got any contractors that you all would recommend? In most cases, I mean, unless they're just, the only problem you run into now is that people are just so slammed and they don't have the availability to do stuff, but they'll have people that you can reach out to. And in turn, if they don't have availability, they're going to have people that they know, and you can pretty easily get a list of different contractors. It might be a GC that handles everything. It might be individual contractors and their specialties. Like you get an HVAC person, a plumbing person, electrician, things like that. And then you can build your list from it and you can go and chop them against each other. And I mean, let them know. I do it, and a lot of people don't like to do that, where you tell them that, hey, I got other people bidding this job out. And there's mixed emotions on that, but a lot of my contractors, like, I've known for a while, and they know that they're always bidding up against other people on the job because they see other jobs that I get done by other people. And they're like, they'll give me shit. They're like, man, you know, I could have done that roof for you or something like that. And I was like, I'm going to send you a bid on, like, I'm going to send it to you every time to bid it out. And it's like, once you know, and you've used enough people, you know who does good work, mm-hmm. and you know who you want to work with. And you can send those projects out just to your people that you know do good work. And either way, at that point, I'm just looking for the best price because I know they both do good work. I've used them in the past and I've got the rapport with them to do that. But, you know, in the beginning, I wouldn't say, oh, I'm chopping you up against three or four other people, because that contractor doesn't know you. And especially right now, I mean, with the way things are with pricing and lead times and everything like that, and just the overall demand for contractors these days, like, you probably need to be a little nicer in the beginning and build that rapport and build that relationship with them. And maybe it means paying a little bit more in the beginning to get somebody that works well with you, and you build that relationship, and then it comes down the more business that you give them. But I wouldn't start off, like, on your first deals thinking that you're going to get the same deals that, like, someone like me or someone who's been doing flips for, you know, a decade is going to get, because that takes time, and that takes, you know, a history of showing that, hey, I pay the guys once they do the work, treat them fairly. I give them, you know, give them the first shot at giving me a bid on the work, things like that, when I have a project coming up.
Yeah, that's really good. Really good reminder there that, like, especially if you're in a new market, starting with the people that have the relationships already, that it won't be competitive with you. Because sometimes you reach out to another investor and they don't want to give you their best people. They don't know you. But the realtor has more reason to give you some referral because it's not competitive with them. And then maybe you'll get to work with them on the back end of it, of the flip. So that's like, just
very I will always give out a list of my contractors, but trust me, before I send that out, I'm telling my contractor that if their work with me slows up from it, that's the problem. So just know that if you get somebody from me, that they've been warned that it shouldn't affect their work with me.
I like that.
I still come first.
I'll help you, but don't let it hurt me. I like that.
Exactly.
One thing now, I guess, like, kind of going down the checklist of, like, solving for stuff, and always with the beginner in mind. Let's say now they have a contractor, contractors. Actually, before we even get into that, really quickly, how do you think about just the difference, or, like, you know, definition of between a contractor and a handyman?
A contractor in my mind is going to be more, they're going to be more focused on a specific area. So, like, you might have a framer, you might have a drywall crew, you might have an electrician, a plumber, HVAC, all that stuff. So we've got, you know, individuals that are dedicated pretty much to those specific things. And then we might have, like, we've got two guys on our payroll. They would be more like handymans. They go out to our maintenance calls, or they go and do, like, once we get a flip or a renovation to a certain point, they go in and they finish it out. So they're, like, hanging fixtures, setting toilets, like, putting blinds up, things like that, making sure the light bulbs are, making sure everything works, doing punch outs and stuff like that. So, you know, I think a contractor is going to be more focused on a specific skill or trade in that.
That's true. What it sounds like is, in that model, like, the handy people are more like break fix, and the contractors are more like, they have a craft, they're dedicated to a project or, like, a specialty. So let's say now someone, okay, kind of going down the path here of this, like, bathroom example. Okay. So, 'cause again, this could freak people out. and now they get the list of people, they call them and they bid it out. They get a bid. It's from someone that they've heard good things about. And now the work starts and they're like, how do I know if they're doing a good job? I don't have like an eye for this. I can't see what they're doing. So like, what do you advise people, or what advice do you have for people on like managing contractors, overseeing work, and also just making sure that like the quality is good if they don't have an eye for it?
I mean, that's tougher because I didn't start it until I knew like what to look for and knew like could tell whether it was good or not. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of people. The biggest problem I've had is with tile, like tilers over the years, because I've done a lot of my own tile for a lot of it. And I'm like, I don't think that I'm a super great tiler. But then when I look at other people that do tile work and I'm like, I'm better than that. You need to do better than what I can do, or otherwise I wouldn't hire you. So, I mean, a lot of it's just, you're going to have to get in there unless you know somebody that can come and like has the knowledge in those areas. And in that case, it might be better to hire like a general contractor to find like a GC in the area. And he's a GC is going to have a lot of ties to those individual trades. Like a GC is not going to be using their people on everything. They might have a couple workers like for their company, but they've got, you know, this electric company that they work with, this plumbing company they work with, and this drywall company, all of that. So, you know, if you don't know what to look for, you may find a good general contractor that can oversee the property, and you know, they're going to possibly get you better deals because of their relationships they have. But then you're going to pay a fee for their time and watching over the project, being the oversight on it, double checking to make sure things get done the way that they need to. And in that case, you can just find a general contractor in the area and check on some of their previous projects. If they're worth anything, they're going to be able to show you prior completed projects and things like that. You might even have some that have finished up recently, if it's a flip or something like that, that you can go and, you know, walk if it's still for sale, or see the listing photos from when it got put up and, you know, just check it out. Just know that everything, but it should picture better than what it looks like in real life. Almost everywhere, the pictures are going to be better than it is in real life. 99% of the time.
Yeah, that's just, I guess, a good like thing to be aware of and know that when you get there, it could look a little different. But I think the moral of that story there too, even like going back to what you were saying at the beginning of how you learned a lot of this stuff, is like, if you know the general idea of what it is, like that's going to be way easier to assess and manage if you have no idea what like a good outcome is. And some of it you can learn by doing before like you hire someone to do stuff. And some of it, like if you're having tile put in, you can watch a million tile videos on YouTube to see what a good and a bad job looks like, or things to look for. Like, this has been figured out already. So like, I think for you, you had experience from doing. Some people might be able to pick up experience from learning on YouTube, and you know, then that could help like overseeing the project and stuff like that.
And I mean, on another note, I mean, if you're doing a flip for resale that you're not going to hold on to, you're just flipping it to sell. Sometimes that inexperience can be helpful because you're kind of seeing it as a retail buyer might see it. So me, because I've done so many renovations or been in and out, like I can spot the smallest things that might piss me off that I want to have fixed. But a retail buyer may never even notice that that's an issue or anything like that. Like I'll walk into, you know, bathrooms at a restaurant or something and, you know, using the urinal, and I'm like, this grout looks terrible on this tile. Who did this grout? But nobody notices that stuff. Like 99% of people shopping, like going through looking at your bathroom, aren't going to notice that grout isn't even all the way across the span, or your gaps are a little bit off. So in some areas it may, you know, help to have that inexperience and just, you know, looking at it as like a retail buyer, you know, hey, does this look good, like in a macro, without getting too much into the detail, does this look good like when you're walking through it, when do the rooms feel good? Does everything, you know, present the way that you want it to? And is it given the right thing? Because, you know, if you get too much into the details, you might, again, overanalyze stuff. You might second guess stuff. You might question it. You might, you know, there's a saying that my boss says all the time. He's like, he goes, we're chasing, he goes, we don't want to be chasing dimes here. And what he's talking about is, you know, you're another way some people say it is like tripping over or picking up pennies or picking up dimes and, you know, not going on for the dollar. Like just right. Sometimes you just got to not focus on the small stuff and move on to the bigger picture at the end of it.
For sure. It's, you know, like a balance of it. But I think once you do it long enough, you realize like what savings are worth effort and what are taking away from bigger picture things that can make more money, you know? So
yeah.
On that note, I have a like more curious question of also that I've thought about a lot with like hiring people and also like having relationships with people. So you work for a company, but also you have a huge business your own on the side. So like, I'm curious how you or the company you work at, like kind of manage that like relationship or thing that it's not competitive with each other, or that like there's a working relationship that they're cool with you having a big, you know, side business and a big business that, you know, like isn't necessarily directly generating money for them.
Yeah. So when I came in, the guys who, the two owners of the company I work for, they kind of started out the same way. And, you know, they got to us, they started buying single families. They started buying smaller multifamilies. They, you know, grew through that. And now Denton Floyd has got a development side. So they're pretty much mainly focused on that side is just building new Class A apartments and mixed use facilities or assisted living facilities. So that's like all they do now. And then on the operation side, we only manage properties that are over 100 units for third-party management. So they're like, look, as long as your stuff isn't affecting your job here with us, go do all that you want and all that you can handle. If you want to manage assets, like if you want to do management on stuff that we don't want to manage because it's too small, go ahead and do it. If you want to buy all this stuff that we're selling, like we'll give you a deal on it, go ahead and do it. Like their big thing is your work with us isn't affected. You can do anything that you want outside of it. Cause the way they look at it is, and it is true. I mean, they're the 800-pound gorilla. I'm just, you know, a small kitten over here. They're not affected by by what I'm doing.
For sure.
It makes sense. I'm not out there buying or trying to chase, you know, a 300 unit apartment complex or build a brand new one. I don't have, you know, the abilities or anything to do that. So if I were, I would just go and say, hey, y'all want to build this apartment community for me
and work together. Right.
So I'd probably be like, hell yeah, I didn't know you had the capital or the investors right. to do that.
Gotcha. So it's done in a way where you have, you know, like freedom to do what you want to do. It's not competitive. And then there's still ways that you guys could partner or work together on other projects. So it makes sense. Yeah. I just think a lot of people, they're like torn or they may be concerned about in any capacity starting a side hustle or another business if they think that it could affect what they're doing. But at the end of the day, if you have that working relationship and know that you're going to get done for them the things that you need to get done, and then you have the freedom to do the rest, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked over the years, like with the owners and with my boss, who's the president, you know, we'll talk about stuff I'm doing and they'll check with me. They're like, you know, are you still in this for, you know, the foreseeable future with us? Or do you have any plans on leaving soon? Cause they know, you know, eventually my goal is to not work for them until I'm 50. They know that I'm going to go off. And once I get to a certain point, I'm going to pursue just my own, you know, my company stuff. And they're fine with that. They're like, you know, just give us a heads up, like keep us posted on what you're doing. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I actually went through a divorce and then got remarried, and now my boss is actually my father-in-law too, so he knows what's going on all the time anyways.
Gotcha. No secrets there. That's cool. Before we kind of get you out of here with, like, you know, last top of mind stuff, I have a curious question. As you know, there's a lot of Louisville investors and, like, Louisville focused people in some of our groups. And one question I've seen popping up more lately is deals in the West End. And for those who don't know, maybe if you could just give, like, a summary of what the West End traditionally has been in Louisville. But I'm curious what you think right now of, like, the next couple of years is for that area, and if you would ever invest there, or if you see that as, like, an opportunity instead of, like, what it's traditionally been known as.
There's a lot of people that see that there is opportunity up there, or say that it is, you know, being rebuilt and restructured. So the West End in Louisville is kind of like this northwest pocket of west of 9th Street. They call it the 9th Street Divide in Louisville, and north of, like, Algonquin Parkway is kind of how I would section that off. Now, there are little pockets in there that are all right, but then there are little pockets in there that are terrible. And I would say overall, the West End, it's not anything that I have any interest in. I've seen, mainly just because I know a number of investors that, like, started out with stuff in there or have stuff in there, and, you know, the cash flows are great. The you know, rent return for the purchase price is ridiculous. Like, you can get a 3-4% property out there, no problem. But what are you getting for that is the other thing. Like, you're going to have constant issues with the property, problems collecting the rent, things like that. It's just a very tough demographic out there, very tough rental market out there. It's, I mean, they're doing a lot for the West End. Maybe in 5 years, it'll be, you know, the next hot area up there in, like, the Russell kind of Portland area, where they're trying to do a lot of development. That's kind of north of Main Street, and basically the whole West End there goes from Russell to Portland. And I know they're putting a lot of money up in the Portland area, so there are a lot of people that say that it'll be the next, like, up and coming market of Louisville. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% convinced. I think that they need some more like, big names up there before a lot of stuff happens. I mean, they were going to get a Walmart out there a couple years ago, but the residents of the area, like, petitioned it and threw a fit, and damn, Walmart decided to pull out and build somewhere else. So there's only, like, one Kroger in that whole area, and it's kind of a hot spot for criminal activity. So, like, if you got to go and do some work down there, there's a couple Ace Hardwares that have been there probably since the 20s or 30s, mm-hmm. but you're not getting all your building materials. You got to go 45 minutes to hit a Lowe's or a Home Depot from deep in the West End. And a lot of contractors don't want to go down there. I mean, I think that there's got to be more done on a, you know, a governmental level here in Louisville to focus. I mean, they say they're focusing funds to down there, but if you try and, like, do any of the programs that they have for it, it's just like jumping through so many hoops to get any of that. It's I'm probably not one to ask about the West End. I won't buy anything in the West End.
You're the perfect person to ask.
The West End, I'm not interested.
You know the area, and you know what? This is worth, like, someone needs to hear this, that is looking on bigger pockets, yeah, or may have read something from out of state, and they think this is the next thing. So people need to weigh, yeah, both sides of it.
The only places I would, if you go all the way to the West End, almost to the river, it's pretty nice on Southwestern Parkway and Northwestern Parkway, which go up along the river on the West End. If you get around there and you can find a, you know, big place with that's a good price to flip or to rent, you can get places that go up, you know, pretty good price range up there. And there's probably, I see more, you know, nicer areas around there than if you get in the middle of that. If you stay around the outsides, it's okay. But if you go in like the middle of that pocket, like stay away from like, you know, 17th Street, the California. If you look on Google Maps, there's like an area that says California in Louisville. That area is pretty tough. I mean, if you've seen any videos of like, you know, driving around Detroit, things like that, I could go take some videos that look almost the same, like boarded up houses, burnt down, empty lots, full of trash, stuff like that. I mean, it's rough over there.
Gotcha. Okay. That's good feedback. So if anyone's thinking about that area, definitely give this a second.
I'm not saying not to do it. I'm saying
go back and listen to what you're saying. You have feedback on certain parts of it.
I can be a lot more selective on the stuff that I want to do right now. I'm not saying that I haven't owned anything in the West End. I'm saying I would buy in the West End.
I'm saying if anyone's considering,
it is a good place, a
neutral opinion, sure, that they could listen to both sides on and know if they're going to be in the right or wrong area, you know, for maybe
if you want to get in for super cheap. The West End, you can definitely do it, and you can make money in there. I mean, if you – like in the Louisville Network, I mean, Hampton Scurlock, he buys that stuff all day long, and he kills it. So that's the way that he does it. I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
I'm lazier than that. I want to buy easy – like easy stuff that, I mean, I'll buy a rundown house that needs everything to rebuild it. Like, I'm not afraid of a project, but once it's done, I want it to be, you know, pretty much something that's self-sufficient. Like, once we finish that work, if we hold on to it, it's either, you know, if it's Airbnb, we've got our systems in place that we don't have to do a whole lot. If it's a rental, you know, we fill the unit and then we don't have to do a whole lot from there. If we did a good job on the renovation, we shouldn't have to really go back until, you know, the end of the year and ask for a rent increase when we do a renewal.
Right. So, Brett, what's your current focus right now?
So, I mean, our biggest focus probably is, you know, local flips to generate cash flow to buy destination Airbnbs, I think is our bigger focus right now. I mean, we just bought our one down in Gulf Shores back in August. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, a little bit older, dated property. So it's finishing up. I'm actually flying down in 2 weeks to go hopefully do, you know, final punch out stuff and get it ready for listing. But I know, you know, we've been looking around like somewhere in the Smokies, you know, something that we can still get to pretty quickly from Louisville if needed. We've got a couple properties in Lake Cumberland here in Kentucky, and those have done pretty well. So we always keep our eyes out if we see anything else around there that might be a good fit for us. But also, you know, trying to see some other markets that may be decent year round, but good for, you know, Airbnb as well. Okay. Places that we'd like to go.
Yep. It's like what we were talking about before, man. Where do you want to go? And, you know, where can you split some time? So that's cool. Brett, what's the best way for people to get in touch? Either check you out on social media, maybe partner,
or maybe just
ask a question.
Probably Facebook. Okay. I've got an Instagram. I might have sent it to you. They can reach out to me on there, but I'm rarely ever on Instagram. I may have a Twitter, but I've not been on Twitter ever. So probably Facebook or email.
Cool. All right.
I got a TikTok. I just watch stuff on it. So I just watch all the John Farber videos. And
you're not one of those lurkers with no picture, just throwing shade, are you?
I do not have a picture on TikTok.
You are.
But I got a name. It's got my name.
I know.
At least I'm not like user 2675301.
I always wonder if they intentionally did that or that was given to them, but it's like, why would anyone want like 60 numbers as their username? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Just weird. but
I don't even know. I think that's a concerted effort because I don't even know how you set it up and keep that.
Yeah.
Because you almost like when I set it up, it's like you want to link this to like your other stuff and use that name. But just like all my stuff's like Brett Grigsby, like first and last name, no spaces. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think some people are on there just to troll, which is, you know, that's their prerogative. So it is what it is, but there's a lot of different weird things going on there.
And, yeah.
It's always interesting. Brett, appreciate you coming on, man. Excited to talk more and see what you have going on the rest of the year and see where the business goes, man. But appreciate you jumping on and it's just been fun to see what you've been up to.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me. It's a good time.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. See ya. See ya.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.